In the late 1970s, when the government mandated we get the fat out of our food, our next guest says the food industry responded by pouring more sugar in. Dr. Robert Lustig believes the result has been a perfect storm, disastrously altering our biochemistry and driving our eating habits out of control. To help us lose weight and recover our health, Lustig presents personal strategies to readjust the key hormones that regulate hunger, reward, and stress, and societal strategies to improve the health of the next generation. His book, Fat Chance, also explains which foods are the problem and which ones are the solutions. Robert Lustig has spent the past 16 years treating childhood obesity and studying the effects of sugar on the central nervous system and metabolism. Again, the name of the book is Fat Chance, Beating the Odds Against Sugar, Processed Food, Obesity, and Disease. It is published by Hudson Street Press, and it's a pleasure to welcome Dr. Lustig to the program. Thank you very much for being with us, sir.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe.
Give us a sense of how you came to this subject as a pediatric endocrinologist of looking at this issue.
Well, I'll tell you, I did not go into this field looking for this. I was interested in taking care of short kids and kids with diabetes and, you know, all sorts of, you know, other hormonal problems, problems of puberty, problems of the adrenal gland. Obesity wasn't on my radar. In fact, I, like so many of my colleagues, did everything I could not to see obese patients, probably for the first 15 years of my career. However, as a neuroendocrinologist, as someone who studies the brain and understands how the brain controls hormones and vice versa, it became more and more clear, especially with the discovery of the hormone leptin, which goes from your fat cells to your brain and tells your brain you've had enough, that obesity was clearly a neuroendocrine disease, and it fell within my bailiwick. I, at the time, was at St. Jude Children's Hospital down in Memphis, Tennessee, and we had a whole bunch of kids who'd had brain tumors. They survived their brain tumors, but immediately after their brain tumor treatment, they became massively obese, and no matter what they did, they continued to gain weight. And this is well documented in the literature, and it's a disease called hypothalamic obesity. And we learned from the leptin story that these kids, because their brains were damaged, they could not interpret, they could not see the leptin signal. And it was my charge to take care of them, figure out how to deal with them, because they were gaining weight at least 2 pounds a month, nonstop, ad nauseum, up to 350, 400 pounds. These children were absolutely miserable. They were saved from their tumor only to succumb to a complication of their treatment. You know, that's double jeopardy. It's just not fair. And so I basically had to figure out what to do for these kids. And what, after reviewing the literature, it became clear that these kids had very high insulin levels. And the question was the insulin the cause of the obesity, or was the insulin the result of the obesity? And I chose to think that the insulin was the cause, that because the kid couldn't see their leptin, that meant their insulin levels were way high, that they were over-releasing insulin in an attempt to try to drive extra weight so that they could make more leptin because their brains thought they were starving all the time. We gave them a drug that blocked insulin, and lo and behold, they started losing weight. A lot of weight. Not a little weight, a lot of weight. And more importantly, these were kids who sat on the couch and ate Doritos and slept, and they started voluntarily, spontaneously exercising. Parents would say, I've got my kid back for the first time since the tumor. Kids would say, this is the first time my head hasn't been in the clouds since the tumor. I said, this is very interesting. So we ended up doing 4 studies total with this insulin-suppressing medication, and every single time, the same thing happened. And we did it in adults without brain tumors, and the same thing happened again. And so what I realized from that set of experiments was, it's the insulin, stupid. It's not what you eat. It's what your hormones do when you eat. And that's a big difference. And since then, we've gone on to evaluate why people's insulins are so high. And people always said, well, their insulins are high because they're fat. No, they're fat because they have high insulins. And by looking at that issue and turning it on its head, and instead of assuming something that was a result, but rather a cause, we have made major inroads in terms of treating obesity and dealing with the metabolic consequences. And that's how I got into it.
So let me ask you a question. The title, the subtitle of the book, Beating the Odds Against Sugar, Processed Food, Obesity, and Disease. Give us a sense about the odds. What are the odds as they currently stand?
Sadly, the odds are pretty darn bad. And that's what all the data shows. I mean, things keep going up. We are now at 55% overweight in this country and 33% obese in adulthood. And kids are just right behind us at 20% obese, and we even have toddler and even six-month-old obesity epidemics now. So the chances that you will become obese in your lifetime are pretty darn good. They are the modeling right now assumes that by the year 2030, 65% of America will be overweight, and 50% will be obese. And you know what that means? That means no health care for you, because this will chew through all the healthcare resources of the country. In fact, the General Accounting Office now predicts that Medicare will be broke by the year 2024. You think this is okay?
So what do we need to do, in your opinion?
Well, the first thing is you have to realize what's causing the problem. You know, everybody thinks this is about gluttony and sloth. These are behavioral disturbances. Because it's behavioral, it's the obese person's fault. It's personal responsibility. Deal with it yourself, you know, and tough luck for you if you're obese. But you know what? Everyone's getting obese. And every country is getting obese. There is now more obesity than malnutrition in Africa. I mean, there's more obesity than malnutrition in Asia. How is this possible? You want to call the Japanese a bunch of gluttons and sloths? They have a huge obesity problem. The fact is, this looks more like an exposure. This looks like influenza did. This looks like tuberculosis does. This looks like HIV did. This looks like something that is communicable. But how can obesity be communicable? Well, it's got to be something that we're all exposed to. And the answer is, the one thing that we're all exposed to now more than ever before is sugar. And sugar plays a very specific role in this obesity epidemic. It is not the only thing that causes weight gain. Lots of things cause weight gain. French fries and potato chips actually cause more weight gain than, say, sugared sweetened beverages. But what sugar does, and because of the way sugar, the sweet part of sugar called fructose, is metabolized, it actually foments all of those downstream diseases, the diabetes, the heart disease, the dyslipidemia, the stroke, the cancer, the dementia, the non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, the polycystic ovarian disease. All of these diseases are driven by high insulin levels, and the high insulin levels come from the excess consumption of sugar.
And we only have about a half a minute left, but ultimately, as you say in the book, it's on us. We can help. The odds are against us, but we can do this.
Well, the fact of the matter is, in order to be able to do anything, you have to know what's wrong. Okay, you can't fix a problem if you don't understand the cause. So that's why I wrote the book, is to explain the cause to the public. The question is, can you do it alone? Can any individual actually make a difference? Here's the problem. Of our current food environment, of the 600,000 items found in the American grocery store today, 80% of them are laced with added sugar. 80%. And if you look at where sugar comes from, and right now our current sugar consumption is 22 teaspoons a day on average, one-third of that comes from sugar-sweetened beverages. Well, they're easily identifiable. One-sixth come from things like desserts, candy, things you would recognize as being sweet. And they're identifiable. But one-half of all of the sugar that you consume every single day comes from things you had no idea had sugar, like, for instance, salad dressing, bread, hamburger buns, hamburger meat, for that matter, barbecue sauce, down the list. It's in everything. All you have to do is look at the food label. The problem is the food industry tries to hide it because there are 56 names for sugar, and you don't know all of them. So they have their way of sneaking it in, and they do it because they know when they do it, you buy more. This is a war, because what's good for the food industry is bad for you, and what's good for you is bad for them, and there's no middle ground. This is a war, and you don't even know you're fighting. So I wrote this book as a handbook for people to get, you know, smart and, you know, get with the program, and also start putting pressure on their congressmen to actually start reining in the food industry from this very egregious practice.
The name of the book is Fat Chance. It is published by Hudson Street Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.